For Food for Mood with Dr. Judy Werpin. Judy is the co-author of the Serotonin Power Diet, serotoninpowerdiet.com. She is also author of Simon Loses His Tummy, the Kindle edition, and also Before Her Voice Was Still, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Dr. Werpin.
Good morning to you. Good morning to you, and I hope things are getting a little better in terms of weather and everything else.
We're looking out the window at what can, just for this snapshot moment, be described as gray and wet and cool.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But how about you?
Send you some sunshine.
how about you, and how does it feel to be a part of a state that is opening gradually that you're not open?
Well, the southern part of the state is
not
much, much more conservative and cautious about this, and the only things that have opened are the parks with restrictions so that the playgrounds are not accessible, and there are certain, like, dog parks are not accessible, you know, where people might congregate. But it has made a difference. I must say that people are very, very good about wearing masks. You know, even on a bicycle or rollerblades or a skateboard, people do wear masks all the time. And if you see somebody passing who doesn't have a mask or a scowl, of course, I can't tell you're scowling because you're wearing a mask.
They can see your eyes.
You move along. You move out of the way. And so I think that it's just becoming habitual. So that, again, the people without the masks are the ones who are sort of the outliers. And that helps, I think, a great deal.
And it makes people feel more comfortable. That is part of the idea. Because, again, humans are very interesting and, shall we say, highly calibrated creatures. That one tends to lose sight. One tends to lose sight of that when you're doing most of your interacting through a screen. And
that's true.
And I just think that, you know, you can partially take that for granted. I can, because we also have other four-legged creatures, and, you know, we're in the creature business,
exactly,
so to speak. So we look for those things, but by and large, that is not something that people are as attuned to. So
no, it's true. And, you know, I must say, Jill, that when I sent you the blog today for this week, I was really sort of shocked into writing it by a statement that a friend of ours, as I mentioned in the article, said to me. This is somebody who whose wife was a very, very close friend of mine, and she died of cancer just about almost a year ago. And both of them were very well known in the community, and for several weeks, you know, after her death and through the time of a memorial service, which took place in the early fall, he was the recipient of an enormous amount of company and outpouring and meals, etc. And then the memorial service took place, you know, in September, and as almost to be expected, there was sort of a gradual falling off of people who invited him for dinner, who came to visit. It was his wife that most people were friendly with, and so, you know, they were friendly with him, but it was not the same kind of easy companionship that they had. And again, we were among the ones who, I'm sure, were guilty of not reaching out to him enough, although we did to some extent. So he appears on the sidewalk across the street from me, and I didn't even recognize him because he was so, you know, covered up with his mask and his gloves and his what have you. And he's when I asked how he was, he said he really was in great shape because now because everyone is socially isolated, people are reaching out to him, as everybody else, and so, you know, he's always invited to a Zoom dinner, a Zoom cocktail party, a lecture, a conference, a meeting, what have you. He said, you know, he was so busy, he really didn't have time to sit and read, which is what how he used to occupy his time before, because people who are isolated themselves, as we all are reaching out to others who are isolated, and I realized when he was telling me this, you know, how much we really have ignored those who have been by themselves. And the same thing that I wrote also about this close friend of mine, that's the book that I wrote, Before Her Voice Was Still, about ALS, who was incredibly isolated physically because, A, she couldn't move, and B, she lives in Boston. And for much of the year, it was very, very hard for her to leave her apartment, especially before she had a lift installed to get her wheelchair down to the sidewalk. She lived on the first floor of a very old building that had a high staircase outside. And there was one winter, the winter that Boston had a terrible snowstorm, a terrible snow, like 100 inches of snow, where she was housebound for 8 weeks, you know, and a lot of people couldn't get to see her unless they could walk because it was impossible to, you know, get to her house with any kind of transportation. And again, here is somebody who was totally isolated, but not mentally, only physically. And she did what many of us are trying to, are struggling to do, which is to keep herself, her mind fully occupied. And she did by reading and by, you know, engaging in conversations with people and, you know, and writing, etc. And she knew she would never escape her physical constraints, her physical isolation, because she was paralyzed. But she made the best of it mentally and emotionally. And I think we should take lessons from people like this and realize that, you know, stop, including myself among the people, complaining that we're bored and we can't go out and we can't see our friends for dinner and the restaurants are closed and we have to cook ourselves. Oh, my, it's terrible. You know, just stop complaining about this because there's so many who are invisible whose life is this. This is what their life is. And when we all go back to the restaurants and movies and the concerts, the whatever, they are still going to be inside. They are still going to be socially isolated. And I just hope we don't forget them once we go back to what was more or less a normal life.
And what we're going to do is make sure that we don't, because if nothing, it's there are going to be some interesting takeaways. And you know, it's very difficult because let's just say that the fear gene was so activated so intensely that a lot of people are going to, you know, spend a lot of time sorting themselves out. But I think, or I hope, that it will start to divide, that the people who want to stay in can stay in, and the people who want to go out can go out, but that an understanding and a little bit more compassion and empathy and sensitivity has been created in the people who are going out, you know, for the, as you say, people whose lives, this is, if you sit back and think about it, everybody knows probably two or three people whose life this is anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. And I said, she knew that life was not going to get any better. It was just going to get worse until she died. And as she said to me, and I, you know, I quoted this in my article, she said, life is just too short to spend time being depressed and angry. But she said, because I don't know how many days I have left and why waste a day feeling this way. And, you know, in a sense, we don't know. You don't know. I don't know. Have I been exposed? I don't know if I might get sick tomorrow. I don't know if I might get sick and not get better. None of us knows that. That is a pervasive fear that I think all of us have to accept. And so, again, why do we, you know, bitch and moan, oh, I can make for dinner tonight. Oh, I have nothing to do this afternoon. Wait, when tomorrow we might look upon today as saying, wow, we were healthy and we should have appreciated it.
Yep.
We should have appreciated what we had.
Thank you very much, Dr. Judy Wortman.
Well, keep well. Bye-bye.
Food for mood.
And you can hear Judy Wortman, of course, Thursday mornings right before This Week in the Lakeville Journal on Robin Hood Radio.